Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lupica, MSNBC and MLB.com.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press. Welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast, the podcast incarnation of the long-running TV show on ESPN. That was always on Sunday mornings. This podcast is on Mondays and Thursdays. As we speak, the tournament is beginning to rev up. And rather than focus on any one or two particular games, I think the one universality that we can say about this tournament year after year is that there's a handful of coaches that you can argue steer this thing, and for all the teams that come out of the blue or are having a great season or the underdog, it always seems to come down to Krzyzewski, Calipari, Izzo, Beilein, Wright, a handful of other guys.
Williams.
I mean, is this one of those rare cases where it's kind of an oligarchy? You know, there's multiple people ruling this sport, and it just depends on who has the recruiting year and who's got the players
Are you saying it's like Russian oligarchy? Because if it is, Mitch, I just want to say there's no collusion. There is no collusion in college basketball, okay? Hey, here's the thing when you look at these guys. Nobody looks at baseball managers quite like this, okay? And Mitch talks about this all the time. There's Belichick in pro football, and then there's everybody else,
right?
Okay? But there is this group of guys, and maybe if we stretched it out, we could make it into the Gang of Eight. And Beilein of Michigan belongs in this conversation, even though he has not won a national champion. But in baseball, it's the general managers who have sort of become the stars now. Not in college basketball. And if you've got one of these guys, you hold on to him. My parting shot today is why it's perfectly natural that you started to hear that UCLA might come after John Calipari. Okay. If you got one, you hold on to him. And most of the time, Cal's kind of the exception here. When the school gets them, they stay there.
Yeah.
Well, they make it worth their while to stay there.
Right. Yes.
And,
yes. Yeah.
And you know, that's the thing. The escalation of salary thing is it's amazing. No, you're right. And you can throw Boeheim in there. You know, because you always right.
He won. He won one. I saw him win.
Yeah, he won one. And there are they. You know, they win 20 relentlessly, and no matter what you think, they always want to find a way to do that. Very recently, they came out of a very modest circumstance to make a run as an 11th seed. And he can coach.
And Bobby, think about how close he was to winning too. If Derek Coleman could have made free throws, they would have beaten. Keith's smart shot wouldn't have mattered that night.
That's correct. Derek Coleman bricked 19 rebounds, but he felt like he had 19 free throw misses that day too. He's in that guy. Yeah, no, this is a very good premise. There is an oligarchy. There is an elite, and Mike, I know you've touched on it and very recently in here annotating who it is that wins the championships and going back 20 years. 25 years, and you know, the common thread is it's Big State use plus Duke now plus Villanova, but these are the coaches still who have done it. And
but Villanova deserves, and a couple of the guys in the oligarchy deserve a little special credit because they don't rank number one in recruiting classes. Mark Few at Gonzaga, okay? When was the last time you heard Gonzaga had the nation's number one recruiting class? It doesn't happen.
And I'm with Jimmy Kimmel. I'm not even convinced that there is a Gonzaga. You know, I know they end up in the tournament, but they could be, Mitch, they could be coming from anywhere.
Right.
He does have a monopoly on Japanese talent, though. You have to say that.
But here's Jay Wright's recruiting classes, okay? Consider this. 2013, 36, 2014, 48. These are the rankings. 2015, 29th. 2016, 45th. 2017, 28th. Okay. They don't even bother going down that far when they start printing up, you know, who had success on signing day. And yet year after year, Duke is there. Kentucky is there. So what Wright has done with Villanova with, you know, if you just go back a short term, he's won more than all of them, two over the last three. I think that he has to have a special knot. On the other hand, he hasn't done it anywhere near as long as a Krzyzewski or as a Williams in multiple places, or even as a Tom Izzo has been in.
Or Cal. Cal's gone to the Final Four with three different schools.
That's right. That's right.
Do you think it's good that these guys stay where they are as long as they do? It really is the only sport where you get that kind of longevity. You know, even
they're
college
like Supreme
football.
Court justices.
That's right. But don't you? The reason I ask you guys, is it good? Is because it also tends to breed a relaxed oversight on certain things, and it's not a mystery that some of these programs suddenly have these assistant coaches making these payments or arrangements or things like that, and that's how they get knocked down. I don't know if that comes because guys just are there for so long that they just figure they can, you know, they're ruling their own kingdom or what? What do you guys think?
Well, they accumulate, you know, I guess you'd have to call it power, influence at the very least.
And capital. They accumulate capital too, Bobby, you know?
Mm. Yeah, but one of the threads, you know, with Villanova, what makes them interesting is that there's a culture. That's the word that gets thrown around loosely, and I'm not sure I can even define what it means, but I think you'd agree that Villanova has had a basketball culture. They won once before, 34 years this year since they beat Georgetown
with Raleigh. I was there, Mr. Ryan and Mr. Oh,
Dwayne McClain, he gathered in that basketball to clinch it right 2 feet in front of me. Absolutely. But they have a culture that it matters. They want the going back in the 50s when my father was assistant athletic director when I was 6 years old at Villanova, they cared about basketball. They coolly care about it, and they've always cared about it. And Jay found a place, you know, to satisfy his ambitions. But yeah, that's part of the deal here. You know, Carolina, the tradition is goes back into the 50s. They won it in 1957 with Frank McGuire. You know, so. Back to the question about, yeah, coaches accumulate the power. Sometimes, you know, you get into that Lord Acton, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and you wind up with Joe Paterno, you know, in football.
Right.
But
right.
And that wasn't, you know, so that's
and
another matter
the thing,
entirely.
There's a name that would be part of this because some guys don't stay and accumulate longevity and capital and power. Billy Donovan, Mitch, you know, it gets forgotten sometimes that the most complete NCAA champion I have seen in the last 20 years, and it may go back further than that, are the two Florida teams that won under Billy Donovan. Those teams had every single element you did. They had the shooter. They had the point guard. They had Noah. They had Al Horford, okay? And those back-to-back titles stand with anything I have seen in college basketball, and Billy just decided he wasn't going to be one of those guys. And he nearly went to the Magic one time, changed his mind. Now he's with the Thunder and doing a fine job there. But he could have, Mitch, he could have been an oligarch.
Yeah, no, he was a fantastic coach.
The one thing I'm about to contradict myself. It's interesting. I was going to say that none of these guys are west of the Rockies, except Mark Few is west of the Rockies. But I'm going to make a point about the fact that there's no power, but there's no such person in the packed 12 at all now, which ought to be a better league. That's another story for another day in both football and basketball.
Yeah, that is another story for another day. It's something I've wondered, you know, okay, John Wooden comes along once in a century, but the way UCLA, and Mike, I know you're going to do a parting shot on it later on, the way UCLA has fallen off the map, the way the entire West Coast has fallen off the map, with the exception of Gonzaga, is incredible. And by the way, it's not just there. It's in football, too, to a large degree. And I'm looking at a list here on my screen of the top football coaches that I'm holding up against the top basketball coaches in college sports. And it seems to me that they move around a lot more, with the exception of Nick Saban. They move around a lot more in college football than college basketball. They're all Urban Meyer, Dabo Sweeney, Brian Kelly, Lincoln Riley. A lot of these guys have moved around in the last few years from school to school, even though they're considered great, great coaches. Is that because there's almost like an out in college basketball? Everybody accepts that winning the tournament is such a crapshoot that you could have the best team in college basketball one given year and just not go home with the title. Whereas in college football, if you have the best team, you're supposed to win it. And if you don't, patience runs out and they want you gone. Do you think that's why guys hold on to their jobs more in college football, in college basketball than football?
It's very interesting because I think you might be surprised about Saban, because Saban is the model for this, okay? Saban has had three college jobs.
Before this, right. Oh, sure.
And it's only been, I mean, only been at Alabama since 2007. And before that, he obviously was at Michigan State, and before, and he won a national championship at LSU, and he coached the Miami Dolphins. So even then, I mean, there's no Coach K's, you know. I mean, Bryant made two famous stops. And there's other guys who you can talk to, but when you look at Saban, okay, he now becomes the gold standard for staying, except it's been a little over a decade for him. There's no Coach K's. There just aren't. And Boeheim.
But why do you think that is? Do you think it's endemic to the sport that people just aren't paid? They want change. They want the new thing. They want the new offense. They want, you know, and they just get tired of people after a period of time?
I don't know, Mitch. I wonder. I actually think... I think this might sound counterintuitive, but okay. I actually think it's harder to do what Nick Saban has done in his sport than even what Mike Krzyzewski has done. I don't know what you guys think. I think that what Saban has done in that sport in this time, and maybe Dabo's about to do it at Clemson, okay, is even more remarkable than college basketball, because going back to Florida, when you do get the right five guys and the right coach, you can do it. It's there's more to it in college football.
And it's not, I mentioned culture with regard to the Villanova in basketball, and we certainly know that there's a football culture at Alabama, but the fact of the matter is that there were many fallow years in there. And there were people, there were coaches, people forget, a coach at Alabama. It wasn't a given that Alabama was going, you know, right. He has restored the luster. He has restored the luster that...
same thing for Ohio State.
Of Bryant.
Yes.
It was a real down period where Michigan just looked forward to going down and beating up on Ohio State. And now, of course, you know, they're unbeatable. I think there are two things that argue one for each side. First of all, in college football, you're not considered a success just because you made it to the Final Four. Whereas in college basketball, you are. If you get to the Final Four, you've had a great season. And if you didn't end up winning the title, you know, it still goes down in your resume. It's like, man, he's been to five Final Fours. You know, no, they don't say how many times you had to win them. He's been to five Final Fours. If you finished number four in the country and got your tail blown off in the first playoff game, they're unhappy with you in college football. Conversely, in college basketball, you generally, if you have a really good team, you get 1 year, maybe two, with your players, and then they're off. And when I say players, I'm talking about your players. You know, it's essentially your quarterback. If you only had a quarterback every year for 1 year, that would kind of be the equivalent. And by the way, that's what's happening with Oklahoma and places like that.
All right, let me ask you guys this, and I'm going to throw a name at you, and despite as demanding as the fan base is, and iconic as the place is in the fan base, don't you think that Notre Dame, even though they have gotten their doors blown off twice in the Final Four, okay, don't you think that Brian Kelly has some cap? I mean, do you think Notre Dame fans are realistic enough to have seen the disparity between the talent level of Alabama when they threw Notre Dame down a flight of steps and Clemson when they threw him down a flight of steps? Or is it not enough that Kelly hasn't won? Well, I think he's a very interesting case.
That's a very good question, because all kidding aside, you use a word that I don't ordinarily associate with Notre Dame fans. There's some offshoot of the word realistic. I would think, Mike, that there's a growing number of intelligent, rational Notre Dame fans who understand what you just said.
They have appreciate it, because they never have the best team, Bob and Mitch. They never have the best team. Nobody's ever said, well, Kelly had the best team and he didn't win. Nobody ever says that.
We'd have to check and see about, you know, the recruiting classes, and they still are in the top five or so often, right? And maybe one of the years somebody said they had the best one. But I agree with you that that's the way they should be viewed. And I think that there's always always going to be a hardcore bunch of domers who are not going to be realistic and are going to think that Notre Dame should win the national championship every year, as opposed to the, I think, growing number of reasonable people that are going to be understand the new landscape that they're living in and happy with what they've got. I think.
And Mitch, where's the bar now set with Jim Harbaugh? What does he have to do now at Michigan?
Oh, well, that's clear. He has to beat Ohio State now with Urban Meyer there, and he has to compete for a national championship. The patience on him has run out. But I would say that two bad seasons and Kelly's gone from Notre Dame. I just don't think there's patience in college football like there is for the body of work in college basketball. Interesting, by the way, you mentioned Notre Dame, who used to be pretty good at basketball too. It's been a long time since that, and they've been okay, but you know, they're not world beaters. They're generally losing 10 or more games a year. But I don't know. It's just an interesting comparison between the two sports, and you get your kingdoms for longer in college basketball. But I think you have to do more work. You're recruiting is, you know, and then out they go and in they come, and it's just going to, once more, we'll see when this is all over, you know, in 3 weeks, are we still looking at three of the four teams are going to be amongst those names that we mentioned there.
You know, by the way, Exhibit A, Mitch, of the premise about the, you know, getting to the Final Four is in and of itself a great, you know, triumph and sufficient to secure. It would be Tom Izzo. It's going to be 19 years since the win.
Right. Right.
And yet he's gone back in half a dozen, or upwards of a half a dozen times.
Well, or Boeheim, who hasn't won it at all.
It's guess what? It's been a while since Boeheim won, too. Let me ask you another question. This, because this plays into exactly the way Mitch teed us up today. Okay. If Coach K wins number six, okay, and he might not have to win, and in light of how the sport has changed since Wooden won his 10, is Mike Krzyzewski the greatest college basketball coach of all time?
Unequivocally, yes. Yeah. And
I agree.
For people who don't know, some of the youngins, you know, they don't know. The path for UCLA, and not for one instant are we disparaging what they did. They played by the rules of the time. And they may very well have won under the kind of circumstances that Krzyzewski has had. But the fact of the matter is that when he started the run in 1960, his first Final Four was 1962. They were beaten in 62. They came back 2 years later and won it all. It was a 25-team tournament. It was strictly regional. And so they were placed into the West Regional. They had to win four games to win the national championship, not six. And they were placed in the West, and they were often playing at home in L.A. in the sports arena. And they didn't have to play national teams until they got to the Final Four. And they were beating the likes of Santa Clara with the Ogden brothers and Long Beach State in a one harrowing game that I'm sure Coach Tarkanian, you know, absolutely takes to his grave. But the point is, it was easier. Now, he had to, and still winning all those championships are still exemplary. What Coach K's had to do was deal with a tournament that now has got six rounds you got to win. And then, by the way, that's harder, and which is set up far differently to make it more rigorous and is not regional. Anyway, so it's, yes, without question.
It's not even in dispute.
You have to take time. Bob, you're right, and you have to take the time and the errors into account. And Mike Krzyzewski, John Wooden coached a particular way, was famous for coaching a particular way and bringing a particular philosophy, and he was able to employ it for all the reasons that you just listed. Mike Krzyzewski has had to shed his skin multiple times over the course of, at Duke, to become a different type of coach. I'm not just talking about offensive teams versus defensive teams or up-tempo or slow. I'm also talking about dealing with four-year players, the Grant Hills and the Christian Leitners and the Bobby Hurleys, versus 1 years and out. And he made that turn without even, you know, in a blink of an eye, he became that guy and that coach and was able to win with them. And I'll give you an interesting numerical statistic because I'm staring at it right here. Over the course of the last 20 plus years, he has never had a team with fewer than 25 wins when the season was over. That's pretty damn amazing, you know. Not one season with less than 25 wins when all is said and done. So he's in a world by himself.
And nothing against the sainted Wooden, okay? But the other part of that conversation is, you know, the relationship in those days with a booster named Sam Gilbert,
right,
and how those kids were getting funneled. think about the scope of what you said. And I'm not handing him the national championship. I mean, we know anything can happen. No. We saw anything can happen the night that Zion went down. Okay. He became the coach of Duke in March of 1980.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Oh, my God.
March. And then the other thing you factor into the conversation of whether he's the best of all time is Bob is and Mitch is work with the national team. I mean, which has only enhanced his status.
Well, that's the trump card. There's nobody like him that is equally conversant and comfortable with the 17-year, the 18-year-old freshman and the LeBron Jameses, that to gain the respect of the LeBron Jameses of the world while you're dazzling the 18-year-olds. That's why he was the perfect choice to be the Olympic coach.
And two other
at a point in time, remember, when we were floundering, there was a point in time in 2006 when the United States of America was the championship of nothing in the international basketball world.
Right.
We were neither the champions of the world champions, nor were we the Olympic champions. And he had to coach a game where we lost to Greece. I was there, to know what we had to do to get back on top, and he got us there.
And two quick things on him: in nearly 30 years on the same job, not a whiff of controversy or improprieties.
We got to take a 20
40,
second.
Sorry,
right here.
40.
He's been touched. He's not 100%. He's been touched. And from the minute he got involved with Myron Piggy and recruiting a Corey Maggette, he entered into that other world. However much he just was dipping his toe in the water, there were other things that happened, such as the time that we got to New Orleans, and the story was, how did Chris Duhon's fat mother get a job in Durham when he's from Louisiana? Things happen at Duke occasionally, too, just
okay.
less so.
40 years and only a brief whiff of controversy.
Yeah, but I don't
and,
want to, we've got and, to be on record.
And let's remember, you can't just get anybody into Duke. All right? You do have to meet certain academic standards there. So he doesn't have the pick of the entire country the way some schools can. I know that it's never the same for college basketball players or college football players as it may be for the student body in general. But Duke's a pretty elite university, and you can't just have a kid who can't spell his name come into the school. So he's had to work with that. So two things there. All right. Hey, before we go on, guys, let me say this about Hair Club, our sponsor. You know, your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of their Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Hair Club is a leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants we'll craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. You can see for yourself just how powerful great hair can be. Hey, we get it. Your hair is visibly thinning, and if you see it, you know others see it too. So get your confidence back. And the first step is to check out Hair Club. Here's how you can do that. Go to hairclub.com/hoops today for a free hair health and scalp analysis for new customers, and you can enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. That's hairclub.com/hoops for a free hair health and scalp analysis, and enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. hairclub.com/hoops. Experience your hair and your life at its best. Only with Hair Club. We're sure you're going to love the club. Let's move on to
Before we move off the oligarchs, okay, yes. two scarlet letter guys have to be mentioned, okay? Because there was a time when I thought Bob Knight was going to, on his way to being the greatest college basketball coach of all time by the time he'd won three championships at Indiana. And the other guy, and I'm telling you, for all the reasons we've discussed today, I believe that when this season is over, you're going to hear Rick Pitino's name back in play. I honestly believe that because he's one of those guys, despite all the baggage he now has.
So will it be Rick Pitino back in play at an Indiana-like school when Indiana was good, or is it Rick Pitino at Texas Tech, which is where Bobby Knight had to finally find a job because nobody would take him?
I've heard some of the Texas schools mentioned, but I just, all I'm saying is, and I'm not endorsing this in any way. All I'm saying is, for all of the reasons, and it's a perfect way to get out of this conversation, for all of the reasons that we have talked about today, I believe some school is going to, Bob, what do you think?
I thought from the beginning that he would make it back only as for a wannabe on the mid-major level, that no one up front would want to go. That's my guess. So, Mike, we'll see. I can't. I just find it hard to believe that. But now the A&M job's open, so let's see.
Well, I'm going to be the detractor here and say that it's not the sport that has changed. The sport would welcome him if they could figure out a way, but it's the college campus in general that has changed. College campuses are incredibly intolerant of anything that smacks of certain types of controversy, particularly sexual offenses and harassment and that kind of thing. And I just can't see what school is on the landscape out there that his presence wouldn't ignite such a protest that would be covered on such a national level that it would make the college president run. I'll believe it when I see it, and there may be one exception to the rule where the college president doesn't care, or he or she is so in love with Patino and what he could bring to the program that they just weather it, and people do get tired of complaining after a while. But boy, a college campus mentality now is different than it was, and that's what I think would keep him out.
All right.
Okay, let's jump over to the world of baseball. It didn't take very long to break Bryce Harper's record. That didn't last real long. And there's part of me that just says that, just envisions this you know, cartoon bubble over Bryce Harper's head on the phone with his agent saying, wait a minute, where's my money? Because Mike Trout just blew the doors off of money, becoming the first $430 million man.
Poor Bryce Harper. Aren't you feeling a little sad about the way he got lowballed by the Philadelphia
Phillies?
Yeah, so lowballed.
Well, not only the lowball, but now he looks a little foolish. When his first official act as a Philadelphia Philly was
trying to recruit
Mike Trout. And you know what? I want to say this, having grown up exactly where Mike Trout grew up, all right, that's my region. I grew up in South Jersey, and everybody kept saying, well, why isn't he going to want to go back there? It's where he grew up, and boy, it's just a shoo-in. I don't live where I grew up. And if someone had said to me, boy, you have an opportunity to go back to within a couple miles of where you grew up, I'd say, no, that's okay. I grew up there and I'm living someplace else. Well, apparently Mike Trout his number one desire in the world wasn't to move back exactly where he lived when he was 8 years old. He likes it in Anaheim. He likes Southern California. He's now going to have actually enough money to afford that lifestyle out there. And why not stay? And he's going to be there for 12 years now.
Well, are we not correct that he's been spending his off seasons up to now back home already? So he can still go. You know, he still wants to go to those Eagles games. You know,
he could still do that. Now, if he wants to California again,
he wants to go to LA. I have a question. Do you think this might be a portent that perhaps this team is going to make that move to Long Beach that has been rumored for a long time and get themselves basically really into Los Angeles?
Well, Long Beach isn't Los Angeles.
I know, but it's right. I'll tell you what's not. Anaheim's not.
Yeah, Anaheim's not.
They're the Orange County Angels, period. End of story. I mean, at least the Brooklyn Nets are in Brooklyn.
But a guy like Mike Trout, who is notoriously camera shy and doesn't like to do endorsements and all the rest, do you think that matters? I think a bigger question is, are they going to be able to win?
He's played three playoff. He has hit one postseason home run in his life. And again, he's still young. I get this. But he is, you would have thought, you know, I mean, the Angels won a World Series in 2002. They were a playoff team, often under Mike Scioscia. But he is doing what he's doing. And he has commanded this salary with basically not a whiff of October.
No.
He's basically not played on the sport's grandest stage.
And he's clearly gone against the grain of modern athletic whims that, you know, I'm going to go hook myself up with a winner. You know, God, how many trillion words have been spent talking about what goes on in the NBA ever since the general manager James, you know, put the heat together. And so, yeah, he's not one of those guys. He's clearly, you know, he's comfortable in his own skin doing it the way he does it. And but he obviously likes everything about the circumstance he's got. He would command, you know, I don't know, on the open market, God knows, you know, but
wait a minute. He would command on the open. What open market is going to pay him more than he just got?
Well,
what
I mean,
market are you talking about?
I just thought it out there. I don't know. Somebody, obviously, his agent Craig Landis, you know, must have explored, you know, to see what there was, whether there was any possibility anybody else. But what it is, it's a lot of play here. It's him, and it's the what it says about the Angels as well, and what they think they can accomplish, you know, in this near future. As they remember, they're very much involved, as much as they are not, and I totally agree. I refused to, when they were calling themselves the Los Angeles Angels, they started doing it. I refused to use that. When I would write the Orange County American League Baseball Club. That's what I called them. Seriously.
Yeah,
I refused
right.
to call them the, because any of us have been privileged enough to live the life that we lead and travel and know that the LA, that Orange County and LA don't even like each other. It's not, they are separate markets, baby. They're not the same
and
market.
And I like the ball. You know what? I actually like that ballpark. I like that when you go there, you can walk to the ballpark from your hotel. There are charms about being the Angels, except they don't win anything.
No. They have won one more World Series in the 21st century than the Dodgers. We'll give them that.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
That will, but it'll be 17 years, though, this October since that happened, and one manager away ago. So, yes. But they have, in fact, won more recently than the Dodgers, although the Dodgers are now sitting on six straight division titles and being frustrated beyond that. But they have had their success. But clearly right now, no. I'll tell you something.
I was shocked. I did not see this coming. I thought all the big contract news had been made. I thought that Mike Trout was at least going to explore the opportunity, the first chance he got to come east. This one honestly gobsmacked me, Mitch. I did not see it coming.
I think people have misread Mike Trout a lot. People presume a lot of things about Mike Trout that he continually sort of disproves. And I think one of those things is that they think he thinks like everybody else thinks, which is, yeah, I want to go here. I want to go with the winner. Like you said, Bobby, I want to go home. But, well, Mike Trout is clearly his own guy. And despite many, many attempts by his agents and the people around him and the people in Southern California, and he may not be in L.A., but he's close enough to drive up, Mike, if they wanted to turn him into some kind of Hollywood movie star, if he wanted to go to the parties there, if he wanted to. He could do all that. He's that great a player. He has no interest, none. And they fight with him consistently to try to get him to do anything, you know, to even endorse anything,
Mitch,
which
think
I
about
love.
This. Think about this. He's the LeBron of his sport, okay? He's the LeBron minus the playoffs. And how many people who read about that contract and we got the big wow factor, Mitch, how many people who have seen him play 5 baseball games in their lives?
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, some of that is because of his low-key fashion. Some of it is because they're on the West Coast and nobody sees those games. And a lot of it is because they haven't been in the postseason. But remember that, you know, back in 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, they were a good team. They finished first place a lot of the times. They went to the playoffs. It's not as if there's some kind of poison to Anaheim ever being in a postseason for, you know, about 6 years there. 5 out of 6 years, they were in it. So why can't, the way they're looking at this, I'm sure, is, well, why can't we do that again? Why can't we have a fertile period here? I have read, I don't know, that they have a decent farm squad now coming up. They got some good prospects. Yes. They've been working on that for a while. They obviously have Shohei Ohtani once he's healthy. And it's not going to be this year, but, you know, talk about a 1-2 punch in terms of draws. If he does come back healthy and just focuses on pitching, you got guys to make people come out to the park. I have seen articles, granted written by 538 and things like that have said that this is a bargain, that when all is said and done, because of how young he is, and this contract will only take until 38 if he sees the end of it, that this will prove to have been a very prudent business deal to do this now and lock him up if he continues in this kind of fashion. And while it's hard to believe that $430 million is ever going to be considered a prudent business deal, who knows? Maybe they're going to be right.
No, people. There are people who claim that it is a prudent business deal, and in that regard, that these we actually be might even be, dare I say, underpaid. That's a theory. It's not my theory.
All right. Before we leave the national pastime today, and the, what Mr. Ryan calls the greatest game ever invented by mortal minds, let's talk about an immortal who is nearly two decades older than Mike Trout is, Ichiro Suzuki, who played his last game in one of the most theatrical baseball goodbyes of all time because it occurred back in Tokyo. The only sad thing, and if you saw the pictures, they were wonderful and emotional and spoke to the beauty of this game and its love for history in two countries, okay, is that he finished with an 0-for today. He went 0-for-4 against the A's in Tokyo.
Okay. The whole thing is remarkable. He comes over here at age 27 as an 8 or 9 year veteran of the Japanese league. We had had success. Japanese pitchers had had prior success, but no Japanese position player had achieved anything of substance in America. And all he does is get 200 hits the first 10 years of his career.
Well, he wins the MVP rookie of the year and the rookie of the year at the same time. Only one other guy in the history of the game.
Yeah, you can argue about that the semantics of whether he should have been a rookie. And I would probably, if I had to take a vote, I would have said no. This is not.
I count that against the fact that 7 years of his career don't count on our numbers. And if he had come here as a legitimate rookie with the kind of talent that he had, if he had been playing when he was 21 or 22, God knows what records he would own in baseball. I mean, his numbers are off the chart good. And also he ushered in, it's hard to remember that, it was, there were rules about when Japanese players could come over back then and we still had a bit of a wall up around our quote-unquote national pastime when he first began his career here. And now it's such a given that baseball and all of our sports really are so international. But he was one of the real pioneers of that. There was resistance to it back then. We forget that. There was resistance in the NBA. There was resistance in baseball to, having the Far East influence and guys coming from other places. And he broke that down. And he broke it down not only with his talent, but with his absolute professionalism. Mike, he played for the Yankees a couple of years. I presume you got to know him a little bit.
No, I didn't. It would be silly for me to say that I did. I mean, I don't think anybody really got to know him.
Well, all right. Let me observe him. He never did anything that wasn't, it's kind of reflective of, if you read his life story, his father was one of these guys who just, 200 hits off the tee and 200 hits from his throwing to him every single day of his life when he was a little child, plus 50 ground balls. But it was all very methodical. He likened it once to hazing, like his whole childhood was a college hazing, and his father told his coaches, don't ever praise him. He needs to develop a spirit where he's not praised. So you could see how he became very sort of methodical and mechanical about it, but he was always gracious. He always had, which is not unusual for Japanese players, the whole notion of humility. He didn't want to take, was it Randy Johnson's number? Remember that, and he wrote him a note making sure that it was okay, So I think he wore the mantle well, and, young people may not appreciate how much he meant to the game because they take it for granted it's so international, but he broke down those barriers.
Oh, my God. Bob, 4,367 hits in two countries, okay? Right. Rose was 4,256. And we can only imagine. And there's nothing that we saw in the big leagues for us to think that if he had started in the United States when he started in Japan, that he would not be the all-time hits leader for Major League Baseball.
Oh, no question. Let's not forget also, he was an excellent defensive player with a great arm.
Oh, one of the great outfielders. Oh, my goodness.
With a great arm. And he was a proficient base stealer, very proficient base stealer, and Also, I was just looking up for curiosity. In the first 10 years of his career, the most times he grounded into a double play was 8. And in 1 year, he grounded into once. We know how well he could run. He was a, you're going to look at future generations, you're going to look at this guy's numbers and say, oh my God. And you do realize, however, because there are going to be, I won't say disparaging people, but people who may, some of whom may have a vote when the Hall of Fame comes in terms of, the first year. He didn't draw any walks. That's such a big deal in the modern game.
Oh, please.
You mean to tell me he doesn't walk into the Hall of Fame his first year of eligibility?
No, he will.
Are you kidding me?
The unanimous thing. That's all. Okay. I'm just preparing you. You will hear this, all right? Okay. His OBP was .355 lifetime. I'm just preparing you. Some idiot is going to try to tear
him. When you look at this man's career, okay, what he did from the age he was when he got to the United States, we'll just take Japan out of the conversation and say, okay, what we know about him, we started knowing on day one in the big leagues. What he did as a hitter was the same thing that Warren Spahn basically did as a pitcher, which was winning 363 games in the big leagues, pretty much starting at the age of 26, because he'd been busy with a little thing called the Battle of the Bulge. Okay. Bob, I agree with you. When the time comes, there will be dissenters. I don't think he'll be unanimous, but in my book, he's a unanimous first ballot Hall of Famer.
No question. I would not be one of those people, but I'm just warning you, someone's going to throw this up. Oh, he didn't walk enough.
Well, if they throw it up, I hope they say it exactly like you just said it, because that's how it should deserve to be said.
Did you know there is a quick way you could save money? Switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. Now, how about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com.
Quick shift here to your backyard, Bobby and Robert Kraft. The developments on this story in Florida are only interesting from a sports point of view, in that what is the NFL going to do? Here he was offered by the authorities down there a plea deal that basically they would expunge the record and squash the evidence and all this stuff if he basically admitted that had he gone to a trial, he would have he would have done something wrong. He would have been convicted. And apparently, Robert Kraft said, I'm not having any of that. I'm not having anywhere on record that I admit that I did anything wrong or whatever. And now there's attempts by his lawyers to squash this evidence, which, let's face it, if somebody got a hold of this tape and put it out on Instagram or YouTube, it wouldn't matter, no matter what he said. And that's the way a lot of things end up being done in the world today and in the NFL. So my question to you guys is, what obligation does the NFL have here, regardless of what ultimately happens with his legal status? I don't think anybody thinks that his lawyers can't outmatch the lawyers down in the Jupiter, Florida area when all is said and done. But the NFL doesn't need a conviction, as it's proven, to take some serious measures, witness Ray Rice, against its players, or its, and they say the players are the same as the owners. So how much is this lack of a legal, stamp going to let him escape punishment?
I don't think he's going to escape. Do you think he's going to escape, Bob?
No, I don't. I don't see how they can. But although, that's going to be interesting, because what we're talking about here is punishing him for lack of discretion. He's going to get off legally. I think we know that. He's not going to spend a second in any kind of incarceration. I don't know what kind of, he winds up with some community service kind of, stuff. I don't know. But the point is, they have to protect the image of the league. And the image of the league is not going to be enhanced by the idea that one of their two most famous owners and influential owners was caught doing a stupid, absolutely idiotic, mindless, stupid thing, for a person of the age of 77 with the social status of him. This is not the way that they want to be.
But there's no tape.
You know what I think of Boston as now? the red light district of sports. I think Ryan is talking to us today from the red light. And sure, do they win all the championships? Yes, they do. Do we win in New York and Detroit? No, we don't, Mitch. But you know what? Our owners aren't hanging around at massage parlors.
Well, okay? You know, do they still have the combat zone down in Boston?
No,
they did when I was in college.
It's been, well, you were in college 6,000 years ago. It's been gentrified.
There is no more. That's a phrase that would be unknown to today's collegian.
Yeah, well, Billy Joel.
Although we all certainly knew it well then.
But he's not going to get off. There's no way that just if you use Jim Irsay as an example, that he will clip Irsay the way he did Goodell and not clip Robert Kraft for this. And what's going to get even more interesting, and now the story is that Trump still wants him to come to the White House. Oh, what a photo op that will be.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I hear what you're saying, and I respect what both of you are saying, and it's likely. But without a tape, without an actual legal arrest, I don't know, Bob, how we went from, oh, they've got him dead to rights, they've got tape of him twice doing this, to, oh, they have no case. I mean, if at some point, if they say, okay, you're not going to take the plea deal that we have here, on what basis do the lawyers have to say, I'm sorry, you can't use that tape? But they're still the authorities, aren't they? If he really did something wrong, how is it that doesn't find its way to a court?
I've always thought he was going to somehow, in some fashion, lawyer himself out of that, because I just, that's where I have the bar set for the legal system. But what I will say is, Goodell has made it quite clear in the past that he is not bound by indictments or arrests, indictments or convictions, as he himself is acting as Judge Roy Bean. That's all I'm saying.
Right, but doesn't he? Okay, Ray Rice situation. They had the tape. So everybody saw the tape. So no matter what ultimately ended up or whatever, everybody saw the tape.
But
what
he wasn't convicted. He really wasn't convicted of anything. Remember, he basically, from the New Jersey legal system, got a slap on the wrist.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But there was a tape, and everybody saw the tape, and Goodell saw the tape. He's not seeing this tape. So my question to you is, like, okay, what is he basing his punishment on if he doesn't see the tape either? So all he has is Robert Kraft saying, I didn't do anything, and some people in Florida saying, he did do something, but we can't show you what it is. How does Goodell meter out punishment based on that? And what is he exactly punishing him for? You see what I'm saying?
The league, there has to be an elastic clause availability here for any commissioner, Goodell included.
Yep,
he's embarrassed the league.
Just for being involved.
Absolutely. I mean,
absolutely.
You can say unseemly. We can go search the dictionary.
A fine?
No, he's going to get suspended, I believe.
Suspended, meaning he can't come to his own games for a couple of games?
That's what happened to Irsay.
Yeah.
He couldn't be involved with the team, right?
Mike, what was the scope of Steinbrenner back in the day in terms of the punishment?
I think he got a year, didn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of it meant, you know, we all know
he had to turn over the running of the team, and basically it changed the history of the New York Yankees, because that is when Gene Michael and Buck Showalter rebuilt the Yankees.
Well, just remember, Jim Irsay was fined $500,000 and a 6-game suspension hours after he pleaded guilty to a charge of driving while intoxicated in an Indiana courtroom. Okay? That's a lot different than what's going to happen here. He's not going to a courtroom, according to him.
Don't forget that the X factor here is how much the commissioner will take into idea the sex trafficking thing and the nature of this. Yep. This is the scope. This is the
context.
Now they're saying that the women involved here weren't victims of trafficking.
Maybe those two specifically weren't. But the fact is that the other employees were, and then him to have any direct or any involvement in this is horribly shocking and for the league, from a league point of view, and disgusting.
And then to fly off to a playoff game, you know, the whole thing. Context is going to matter here. Is going to matter.
That's the
here.
Thing. The sex trafficking thing. It's not just a guy wanting to go get a you know what job. No, it's not that. It's more. It's much deeper than that. And Goodell will have to know that if he goes lightly on him, that is going to be thrown back at him big time. And it's going to be, he's got to know, Mitch, I really believe he's got to come down fairly hard on Robert Kraft here for that reason, if no other reason.
We'll see.
No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct. Nobody does. But make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at Kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
All right, let's go to our parting shots. Mike Lupica, why don't you lead us off?
Now, parting shots.
Okay, and we spent a fair amount of time today talking about college basketball coaches and oligarchs. Here's a tweet that one of them, John Calipari, sent out last night on the eve of another NCAA tournament for him and his Kentucky team. Quote, "Before I go to bed, let me just say this. I'm coaching at the University of Kentucky. In my opinion, there is no better job in the world to coach basketball. My plan and my desire is to retire at Kentucky. I think the university feels the same as I do, and we've talked openly about it," end quote. He sent the tweet out because of those stories circulating that UCLA, which got rid of Steve Alford right before the start of the new year, was interested in trying to lure Cal away from Lexington. And it would have been a smart play by UCLA, and tells you everything about them as they once again start all over again in the endless search for the next Wooden. They've made Final Four since Wooden retired. They even won a title under Jim Herrick. But it is a long time since they have felt like the royalty of the sport. What Wooden did feels as distant there as what Lombardi did in Green Bay. Now at UCLA, they're looking for the latest guy they think can lead them out of the wilderness, as another tournament starts without them.
Now, a little bit more on basketball. You know, you may have heard, guys, the NCAA tournament is with us. And with so much at stake, the referees will be scrutinized. Now, I'm always eager to be of service. You guys know that.
Yes.
So I have a few helpful hints.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I love
for the oft-beleaguered officials.
Oh, good.
Number one, Mike, you may have heard this before. Ask yourself, why the bleep am I here? The answer is, not to show off how much and how well I memorized the rule book. I am here to adjudicate the smooth flow of the game. Got that? Number two, go easy on the rebounding fouls, especially when someone has clear possession of the ball and an opponent reaches in with a little slap or whatever. Play on, especially in the final 2 minutes of a close game. Number three, do not help decide the game with the ticky-tack foul 40 feet from the basket in the final minute of play. Yes, the final minute is different than the first. You're damn right it is. And finally, let a coach whose team has just lost a close call, you know, is going to piss off someone, blow off some steam. Walk away. Don't be altering games with unneeded self-aggrandizing techs. Any other questions? Well, you know where to find me. I'm always here to help.
So I'm reading about Mike Trout and his massive contract, and I figure the record he just smashed must be that of Bryce Harper. But no. Truth is, the previous high mark in terms of total dollars belongs to, are you ready, Canelo Alvarez, the red-headed Mexican fighter who inked a $365 million deal with DAZN, a streaming service out of Britain. Now, be honest. Did you know that Alvarez was considered that bankable? It's a 5-year, 11-fight deal, $365 million. Remember the days when promoters had to scramble to fill up the purse one fight at a time? Not anymore. Streaming is the way to go. And DAZN's fights aren't even that expensive. They did one of Alvarez's bouts recently for $9.99. How do they do it? Volume! And with HBO out of the boxing business now, DAZN must figure it's got the market somewhat cornered. Still, with boxing so off the map, we forget that there's a boatload of money still left in it. Alvarez is considered by most to be the best pound-for-pound fighter out there, although he did lose to Floyd Mayweather. But did you even know what titles he holds? Do you follow the catchweight division? Well, someone does. They don't hand out $365 million for good looks. Frankly, I'm surprised Scott Boras allowed Bryce Harper to fall short of this mark. Who knows? Maybe he didn't know about it either. That's going to wrap it up for today's program, and we thank you for joining us on the Sports Reporters Podcast, which we do each Monday and Thursday. So we'll be back right after the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament to talk about all that. You can catch us where you catch popular podcasts, including on Stitcher. So make sure you do that. We will see you in a few days. And until then, good luck to your team in the tournament. Good luck with your brackets. And on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great weekend.